You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy weekend and free agency introduction, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. My name is Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. Joining me on the other line to cover a shockingly slow start to free agency for the league and the Pacers, really, although it did take off in the last hour or so for us. Former Indy Corners writer extraordinaire Adam Friedman. Adam, first of all, how's it going?
You know, we did like a, I would call it a dry run podcast at about 6 p.m. Eastern. Now it is 10:40 Eastern because we thought stuff might break immediately at 6. There was a lot of news at 6, but not thing that actually happened, just a lot of like facts or tidbits, I guess my brother would put it.
Yeah. I mean, right at the beginning, it kind of felt like the traction was there that we did the right thing. And we did what we did last year with the Brogdon timing, where we, right when free agency started, hopped on a call. And there was a bunch
of news. You got signed like 10 minutes. Yeah. That was pretty good
time. And then nothing. Just nothing. I mean, there were like two signings in 30 minutes. And there was like Fernando Campuzzo and someone else. So it was not worth posting. So now we're going to, we've seen the league evolve, it's gathering. And we can, you know, have formalized thoughts on Gordon Hayward and how it affects the Pacers. And Gordon Hayward is what this is pretty much all about now, because this all starts at about 5:30 with Shams Charania reporting for Stadium and the Athletic that Gordon Hayward is, quote, fully focused and wants to sign a deal with the Pacers. Shams did note that, you know, he could still sign another team or the Celtics, but the Pacers are his preference. So that was the first big news, Adam. And that came as, you know, that follows in line with what we've both heard and what some of the reporting has been, but to actually get it from the insiders right before free agency was a good sign, even if the ensuing signs weren't as good.
Yeah, it was absolutely zero shock. I mean, I think you and I have done 4 free agency podcasts in the last 7 days, and I think after the end of each one, I ask you, because you're a little more plugged in than I am, like, so how real is this Hayward stuff? And you say, pretty real, I think. We'll see what happens, but it's pretty, like, it seems to be moving that way, and each day gets a little closer and a little closer, so. Wasn't surprising, I guess. It just, I guess what was surprising to me, and we can talk about the next piece of it, but like the fact that it got leaked out that they were close usually means they're not close. That makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with you there. There's probably a big gap in the talks, and Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe tweeted out that the Pacers' offer was something to the effect of, and this is all general, right? And no Celtics insider or agent or anybody is going to know the exact offers, but that Pacers offer was Miles Turner and Doug McDermott, and the Celtics counter, or what the Celtics were looking for, involved Turner and Oladipo or Warren. And then I forget who now. I can't believe I don't have the quote in front of me. Someone else.
Ian Begley, right?
And Ian Begley. Yes, Ian Begley, thank you. Of SNY also reported that Aaron Holiday is a guy that could have been involved. But J. Michael quickly came in and said that Aaron Holiday is, quote, safe outside of, you know, maybe a big offer. So it seems like there's currently a gap in those talks, and you know, the way free agency goes, and it's 10:43. You know, we have to preface this stuff with this fast.
Yeah, it could happen in the next 2 hours.
It's 10:43, right? As more signings happen and less options become available, and maybe some of your incumbent guys leave, suddenly the pressure heats up for somebody and something gives. So who knows how this will shake out. But as of now, it seems like Hayward maybe is favoring the Pacers. You know, Woj is reporting, kind of made it seem, we'll get to that actually, but according to Shams, he's favoring the Pacers. And if that's true, then, you know, either they're going to have to come closer to an agreement on a trade, or it just won't happen.
Yeah. So there's like two ways we can go with this, but the first thing we should say is packaging any two starters for Gordon Hayward is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I mean, it honestly is a laughable trade. Actually, I think the idea of Aaron Holiday is more reasonable than putting two starters in. And the simple reason for that is the Pacers' whole goal, if they trade for Hayward, they'd have another $20+ million player to go with presumably Oladipo and Brogdon, is to have a team good enough to maybe make these conference finals next year. Injury breaks their way, whatever, then get to the finals, right? If they trade Turner or Warren or Turner and Oladipo, that goes out the door because they don't have a starting five. It means they're still hunting for that next starter, and they don't have a guy in the wings that can start, and they don't really have the cap space to make move for Hayward to do that. Maybe the trade, even they'd have some cap space, but they really wouldn't, because they would just be able to use the full mid-level, which really wouldn't get you a starter based on the money that Joe Harris got today, for God's sakes, and he's not even really a freaking starter, and he got $21.5 million per year, something insane like that. So that's just ridiculous. I mean, the second thing is that the fact that it's being leaked, this kind of stuff, I don't know who it's being leaked by, whether it's the Pacers end, the Celtics end. To me, it feels like a Boston thing because you're seeing the New York and Boston reporters do it. And Celtics have a history of leaking out trades to try to pressure teams to make moves because Celtics are always one move away from getting the next great superstar. That's always their thing. They're one move away from making a great blockbuster trade or whatnot. But ultimately, in this move, the Pacers hold more leverage because Gordon Hayward can sign elsewhere. Yep. Those closing for nothing, and they also need things back because they're pretty much locked out of cap space and they need some salaries or something to be able to get some players back to make up for losing a starter as well. They'll still be fine, but they in an asset-driven world, they'd want an asset back. And I think we both said this. Turner is not straight up worth the same as Gordon Hayward, but considering the circumstances and what
it's getting that he closer might leave to that for nothing. Point.
Yeah, you get closer. The salaries is the issue, right? You got to probably get somewhere between 20, it's like 2 and 28 million salaries. That's why you see a McDermott being floated. That's why you could see a Jeremy Lamb probably less likely, or even an Aaron Holiday, like that to get to that salary number that evens out. But yeah, so that's about where I'm at.
Yeah, our initial assessments of this trade value are going to be way off because, you know, like we've talked about, this is going to be the third podcast in a row I've said some iteration of this, but like if you had to describe the steps that would have to happen for Gordon Hayward to end up with the Pacers this offseason. Like so far, it's been like bang, 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 bang. It's happening. Step three is him literally saying, I want to go to the Pacers. But as those steps progress, where he opts out, especially being key here, is that lowers the value a ton. Whereas if, you know, if he was still under contract with the Celtics on an expiring, they could just say, well, keep him. You know what I mean? They have some leverage in that point. But now he's on the point where he's literally not on the Celtics next year. You know, if he signs on their team, they lose some value there. So, yeah, our initial estimations of, you know, Turner plus role player plus pick plus thing, that's going to be off. It's probably going to be, you know, Turner plus some
salary filler,
whatever. Yeah, whatever it is. But if they can't close this gap as time goes on, like I said, I think we'll start to see maybe some pressure get on. And who knows what'll happen there, because Brian Windhorst reported and Woj reported. So the ESPN side is a little different from Sham's side. Brian Windhorst reported he's drawn interest from a bunch of teams. He named a bunch of teams with cap space, right? So that's just kind of how it goes. But the Knicks one from Stein seems real. From the ESPN side seems real. Woj saying he's still open to options, including returning to Boston, right? So that's the leverage on their side. It's like, well, he could just come back. And it's kind of unclear where he's leaning at this point, but I have no reason to believe Shams' sources are bad. Shams Charania is Shams MF Charania. So I don't know what to make of it, but anyway, that's a lot to say that it's still kind of fluid at this point in time.
Yeah, so here's kind of the best version I can kind of make of it is, so if Hayward goes to like the Knicks or the Hawks or whatever, they're going to end up paying or overpaying him in a way because I think they're not very good and he's just going for the money, right? So like, I'd say it's 3 for $90 for the Knicks, right? So the Celtics can try to match that, which if they do that, will end up in the luxury tax, which they don't really want to be, and that's kind of been their whole point of actually getting rid of Hayward was to clear cap space in some way, right? That was kind of the point. With the Pacers, it's probably a lesser deal. They're probably talking maybe, you would hope maybe even $22 million, but you could see maybe a $22 million the first year with a scaling up. So maybe it's more like a 3 for $70 deal. Something that
I was
maybe
hearing something in the 3 to $70 to $80 range.
Right. I would say 3 for $75 is what I was thinking, but maybe you could start it at like 23 and work your way up.
To right. 50. With the raises, it would be started right at like 22.
And considering the withholding money this year, it's worth them to say, I'll take the money later anyways. And it helps the Pacers clear maybe a tiny bit of space to have the full mid-level or get close to that number to get retain Justin Holiday. So Celtics have kind of like, I would say like two bad options and one okay option, right? It's let him leave for nothing, match him and be in the luxury tax, or do the sign-up with the Pacers for a player you could use, whether it's Miles Turner, whether it's Devin Turner, or whether you know you want to move one off, maybe that's the issue right now. So you got a third team, do that in a second. But like Miles Turner is a player that like if they could trade for without giving up much, which is kind of what they're doing because Hayward wants out anyways, maybe like they would do it because they need a center. I mean, so that's why I just don't get what Boston's really doing, except unless they're holding out for that third team to move off the McDermott contract. That would make them.
They're being Danny Ainge, and I think that they're operating from a position of that. What based off what the reporting is that they're asking for, I think they're operating from a position of that they really think he could come back.
Yeah, I think so. It must,
because you know, the reason that they would be maybe inclined to do a sign and trade, even if they thought he could come back, is because of the tax, right? They could save some money and maybe have a better fitting team. And that could make them say, okay, we can get Turner, flip this other guy to a third team, And then we get an asset. We save a bunch of money. You know, we've reworked this Hayward situation in a way that helps him too. Great. You know, maybe that's the way they're considering it. But yeah, given the power that they're coming from of like, TJ Warren, are you kidding me? Like, Warren and Hayward over the next however many years you want to pick probably have similar values. Like, straight up. Why would they trade it away? That'd be stupid.
Warren's lower contract, so he actually has more value because he won't make – I mean, by the time he makes as much money as Hayward, he'll have two more years. Basically.
Right, right. Yeah, you might even write you might even write Warren higher over the next.
Yeah, just based on the way he played.
Like probably in the very short term, you pick Hayward, but as the more years you add, the more likely it is that
Warren. And the money is so different that you would take Warren over him every time.
Right, even Warren alone might be a non-starter, throwing him in, like you said, two starters, just not happening. So it's a really complex situation, and I don't know how to resolve quickly. What?
I don't think it's that complicated. I think it's just the Celtics being arrogant. Maybe obviously I'm speaking from the side of a Pacer fan. It feels arrogant.
Here's the thing. If he had opted in, and this is, again, what we had talked about before, if he had opted in, they were allowed to be. He'd be under contract, right? They're like,
yeah, but he's not. He's not under contract. So that's why it's arrogant, I guess.
Yeah. But he opted out. So, like, yeah, being arrogant is pretty tough just because, you know, they don't have it. Like, he's not on their team right now. So,
well, right. And all the reporting out there has said that the Celtics do not want to be in a luxury tax, right? Right? That's been all the sort of.
They're probably willing to pay it, but
I don't know. They don't want to if they can avoid it, right?
Well, the hard cap could be a factor if they use their FOMALY and stuff. So that's $6 million above the tax line. So maybe that's more of the sticking point for them. I don't know.
But so right now they have about $108 million in salary. So if they have to pay them $30 million, they're basically hard capped.
Yes.
Like, they're
and you'd rather get something than nothing. And, you know, Turner alone's $18 million. All of a sudden you're $6 million shy of the tax right there. So
yeah, but if you could do that, you could get him and get a smaller mid-level player. Now, you might have missed out the whole market now, so who cares? What's happening, you know, by now they can move. But I saw a good tweet from Dave Sorrell, our friend over at Miller Time Pod, or what used to be a podcast, and he basically said that as time goes by, the Pacers have more leverage because Hayward will walk for nothing. And to me, I kind of agree with that. The only thing I don't necessarily agree with is the fact that the Pacers, the more time goes by, it'd be harder to keep Justin Holiday, and that's kind of, I think, the key.
Well, I want to add one more thing before we pivot to that, because I do agree with you. I just tweeted about this. But, you know, I've seen some people say something to the effect of like, if he really wants to be here, he could sign the MLE. Well, like, no. Okay, no. He opted out with the expectation that he knows he can get money from somewhere. If he didn't think he could get money from somewhere, including the Pacers, he would have opted in and then kind of flung straight that way. So that's not happening. He's not taking the MLE.
Yeah, he could have opted in and demanded a trade, and they could have figured it out.
And the other thing I'm seeing a lot of tweets about that, maybe this isn't clear to everybody, is people saying like, well, could they trade Miles and whoever to another team and then just sign them using that space? No, the Pacers are so far over the salary cap right now that they would have to dump two high paid players. So two of Turner, Sabonis, Brogdon, and Depot, and then one role player who makes less to clear enough space to actually sign Hayward. And at that point, we're back to what Adam said. You're trading away two starters. Totally not worth it to sign him and screw the Celtics. That, again, becomes not worth it. The most direct route that costs the Pacers the least amount of stuff to get him still is a direct trade with the Celtics. So it's just kind of tough and sticky. And as much as he could say, I want to be with the Pacers, there's not an easy route. There is no easy route at all. But the only way that actually makes any logical and plausible sense and is legal is a direct trade with the Celtics.
Yeah, and we should make it clear that in the ideal world, the Pacers are looking for a three or a four got to play three or four next to Warren and have one center. So, like, if they could do it in free agency, whatever, they would have the money. So they would have to trade one of their centers, and this is the best move because the whole goal, I think, is to if you're being realistic, is to try to put a team together that's good enough to convince Oladipo to stay, right? If Oladipo comes back and is at 89% of his 17-18 self, and you have Hayward at 89% of his, you know, I think 16-17 self, and you throw in Brogdon and Sabonis and Warren improving, that's a team that, you know, you can make a case to be in your conference finals team and convince, you know, Oladipo to sign a long-term deal just because it might be worth it for him. So that's kind of their goal. They have to get rid of more than those kind of players. It becomes harder to get him to want to stay if the team is good, right? I think you have a good case if the team is good to get him to stay. That's about the only way, though.
Right. Well, okay, so something you said earlier I want to address now, talking about Justin Holiday and the timing with him. So it's only night one, and to on the bright side for Holiday and his camp, and really this applies to other free agents too, but the bright side for Holiday and his camp is that it's been a mostly slow first day of free agency. You know, of the really good teams using their mid-level, we've seen the Lakers use it on Montrezl Harrell, and I kind of think that's the only, like, stud team who used their mid-level exception. Some teams use their cap space. But the key thing we're talking about with Justin Holiday's market is, like, the longer – so the Hayward trade has to probably be step one for the Pacers in the offseason just because of the hard cap situation and because of the tax situation, so they really can know how much they have to spend on other guys, right? So anyone else, Sampson, Alize Johnson, and Jakar, excuse me, Justin Holiday, are all kind of sitting and waiting. And the longer they wait, in theory, the number of options they have to sign up their teams goes away, right? It gets taken by someone else. I think currently another roadblock that will open up the floodgates of this free agency is Serge Ibaka, for the same reason. Whenever he decides to take the full money from a team, a bunch of other teams will immediately know, okay, we have this to spend on our plan B now, let's go. So I think that's going to be a roadblock. But, yeah, you know, fortunately for the Pacers, it's been slow moving, so they have had time to negotiate potentially a Hayward deal and then be able to possibly keep those guys if their cap situation allows for it. But, you know, that's when we say the pressure on the Pacers is eventually it'll get to a point where, like, Justin Holiday says, look, I've got the deal from the other team. I want to take it. Like, it's now or never. And then things have to heat up immediately.
Yeah, and that's the only leverage point the Celtics have is that the Pacers ideally want to close on this trade and then re-sign Justin Holiday all within, like, you know, a minute of each other, basically.
So I think Enes Kanter last summer, he signed with the Celtics, so this 2-year deal with a player option in the middle. He said that his agent called him and said he had that offer from the Celtics, and they're all moving so fast. He said he had 5 minutes to decide. Like, it's crazy how fast that stuff happens when you have so many plans in action. And it hasn't been at that level of speed yet, but it could get to that point eventually, and again, when the roadblocks come out of the way. So, again, fortunately for Justin Holiday, who sounds like he's a Bucks target. I've heard that they've potentially been a thing. Drew's on that team now, so keep an eye out for that. But fortunately for him, the Bucks have the options open. But unfortunately for the Pacers, well, I guess I'm saying this backwards. Fortunately for him, he'll still have a bunch of options open. The Lakers are the only team that really spent their MLE that's really good tonight as I look through contenders, and he'll probably want to play for contender given his skill set. Unfortunately for the Pacers, though, the same thing is true that, you know, the Bucks could target him. The Celtics even could want him as a wing. The Sixers still have their mid-level. The Clippers still have their mid-level. The Rockets still have their mid-level. You know, all these good teams still have the option. The Knicks still have their cap space. The Hawks still have some cap space. I think the Pistons use all theirs. But a lot of options for him are still there, which is good for him. You know, as he waits, the pressure hasn't materialized for the Pacers yet. What's bad for the Pacers is a lot of teams still have the option to get him.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to me. The Bucks, I guess Giannis isn't on the Supermax yet. That's probably why. But
they lost Wes Matthews to the Lakers, so they need wings again.
Yeah, I'm surprised they have the full mid-level still. It's kind of crazy.
They probably will not be. Let me rephrase that. The problem for the Bucks is they will not be using it. They're not hard capped anymore. Actually, without Bogdan, never mind. Yeah, they could use it.
Yeah, they don't.
They could definitely use it. Yeah.
And so that's the other thing I kind of wonder right now with the Pacers is if they don't try to make a move for Bogdan to sign a trade, if something falls apart, I don't know what the moves are with him. I mean, he has to.
Yeah, the Kings just spent $160 million on De'Aaron Fox, which is good for the Kings to finally have, you know, they're still not good, but they've been so awful.
I don't know. Paying for Fox and paying for Hill for 2 months in a playoffs is kind of scary, but that's just me.
Just to get someone exciting in the door for 9 years, yeah, though, it's like, you know, they had Boogie, but he was like, not the franchise guy you want, whereas De'Aaron Fox is. So I
know the Kings have a bunch of centers, or they drafted a center, or whatever they did.
Did they draft a center?
Right, and they sent a center. No, they did not draft a center. Do they have a center?
They have Rashawn Holmes, who they like, but they have Bagley. Yep. We've talked about Bagley.
But I'm saying, so an easy move for the Pacers is to overpay Bogdan on like 3 for 45 or 4 for 72 and do a center returner right now.
I don't think they would take that, but yeah.
So do you think Bogdan has more value than Turner? I think you're probably right. He has a little more.
Well, think about what they just did. They did Dante DiVincenzo, who I think has a tiny bit more value than Turner right now, plus the matching salary in that trade. So Turner's close, but just a little.
Right, it was like, wasn't it George Hill?
No. George Hill was in the Drew Holiday trade. Okay, Bogdan trade was just Dante DiVincenzo, DJ Wilson, Ersan Ilyasova.
Okay, that's what I was trying to remember that one was. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, part of the matching salaries, I mean, really, the trade is just DiVincenzo, because the other two are just to make so they can pay him 14.5 or whatever.
They had to value DiVincenzo a lot to make that happen. Maybe Turner has enough value.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think
about it.
Yeah, Turner might have that kind of value. I mean, the thing with the Kings is that they can't really bring Bogdan back because they don't have enough guard spots. I mean, they could play him with a three, kind of, but like, I mean, they could bring him back. I can't say never, kind of, but they're kind of in the same spot of the pitch for Turner's bonus, right? You don't want to bring the duplicate position back, so it kind of puts them in the same spot, which might keep their value the same, I guess.
So, look, did anyone get signed that we mentioned as a possible Pacers target tonight? Derek Jones Jr. was a guy
we did say Joe Harris, but not for 4 for 70.
Joe Harris is one for sure. We talked about Joe Harris a lot on the shooting guards thing as a Pacers full MLE target. He got 4 for 75. The full MLE for 4 years is 4 for 40. So they were maybe halfway there in terms of resources.
Yeah, Marcus Morris just got 4 for 64.
Okay, he was good for the Clippers. That's still hefty, but decent.
Well, you were making that joke. I mean, I think you did when Myers Leonard got 2 for like 20. Like, Morris must be having like a heart attack.
Yeah, geez. So, okay. So, yeah, Joe Harris is one, but the Pacers couldn't even have sniffed that value. The Nets would have lost him. They had to pay him or lose him. I mean, whatever they did, what they did. We talked about Derek Jones for more than one sentence. I really like him. He got 2 years, $19 million, full mid-level for 2 years from the Portland Trailblazers. But I don't think he was actually a target for the Pacers. He's just a guy I like. I don't think Jeremy Grant, we've mentioned in past seasons.
Yeah, he got 3 for 60, but they couldn't offer that.
We didn't talk about him this time, though. He was a past offseason.
But he's going, so he's going to the Pistons, which means he could be on the move pretty soon if they wanted to figure out a move for him. Actually, he would make a nice little swap for Turner if they could figure it out at some point.
The Pistons signed like 70 centers today, so I don't think that's happening.
Well, no, and also they probably are looking for picks and assets, not just a player who's in his mid-20s.
I'm just scrolling through the signings now. I think that's everybody. You know, Bertans would have been a great fit. He's never a realistic target because he was due as much as he got. He got 5 for $80 million from the Wizards. Gallinari, who we kind of skipped over because one site we were looking at for free agents had him as a small forward, one for power forwards, and
3 for $61 million.
He'd have been a good fit. He got $61 million.
He's the highest paid player over the age of 32 to ever never make an All-Star game and receive a $20+ million contract.
Yeah, look at the agent texting Woj these crazy stats.
This is all Woj wasn't asking you.
So I think that's it. That's everybody. I think Jay Crowder might sign with the Heat here soon. That was one we talked about. Joe Harris is the only one we actually said this could be a target. That was mostly
the real one. Left. No, the real one you missed, Tony, is that Russell Westbrook and John Wall might be traded for each other, which means Bradley Beal might be wanting out of the Wizards.
He said he's committed to the team not very long ago, and Tommy Shepard, the Wizards GM, confirmed they are committed to building around Beal. Regardless of Wall, and honestly, if they can get Westbrook for Wall, like maybe they should do that, but that would make me very few people know this. John Wall's my favorite player of all time, and that would make me very sad if his.
Oh, the problem with John Wall is not that he's good, it's that he hasn't played in 3 years because he's hurt.
If his Wizards tenure ends in something this depressing, I'll just be sad.
Man, Bradley Beal is just like awesome.
Yeah, he's damn good. If that actually becomes a thing, that's one of the things the Pacers, you just hears everything. He's that good. So we'll see. But that's where we're at right now. It's 11:03 as we're wrapping up here. So keep that in mind if you are listening that, you know, a lot could be dynamic. And me and Adam have a plan to leave our ringers on so we can call each other in the middle of the night to wake up for a show if we need to. But we're ready to go.
I would like to sleep in tomorrow, to be honest, at least a little bit.
I would too. I've been up very late for the draft and writing for agency previews the last couple nights.
It's been a long week. It's been a long November, man.
Remember when they drafted Cassius Stanley? That feels like 10,000 years ago.
Oh, yeah. We were up to like 2 or 1 o'clock.
We were up so late that night. That was all my fault.
Well, I mean, when you get on the Zoom call with Chad Buchanan, who looks like he needs to sleep, but you know it's bad.
You know, it was crazy. But, yeah, pretty – compared to last year, we're right at 6 when we were on the call. We saw Brogdon and Jeremy Lamb 2 seconds in and got a lot to talk about. Much more tepid this year. Which that's sort of the nature of the league. Not a lot of teams have space, and it's worse for
you. Well, that's what we thought. We thought if you had said going into this, like before everything happened in the pandemic and whatnot, you would have said been quiet because they had all their money locked in for about 2 years. Then it was like, I'll figure out in 2 years.
So we'll see what happens. And of course, we'll cover it all here on the show. Me and Adam probably will end up talking tomorrow. I'm sure the Pacers will do something at some point over the weekend, whether it's officially not commit to getting Hayward or getting Hayward. We'll see. And we'll cover it all here because that's what we do.
Yep. We'll be here.
So thank you guys for listening. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy keeping up with all the free agency madness. And we will see you tomorrow.